Harry Rex was sitting in the jury box with some other lawyers taking in the festivities. As I wobbled to my feet, I looked at him desperately for help. He was rising too.
"Your Honor," he said, "I represent Mr. Traynor, and this young man has not been notified that he would be a witness."
"Go, Harry Rex. Do something."
The judge shrugged and said, "So, he's here. What's the difference?"
There was not a trace of concern in his voice, and I knew I was nailed.
"Preparation, for one thing. A witness has a right to be prepped."
"I believe he's the newspaper editor, is he not?"
"He is."
Lucian Wilbanks was walking toward the jury box as if he might take a swing at Harry Rex. He said,
"Your Honor, he's not a litigant, and he will not be a witness at trial. He wrote the stories. Let's hear from him."
"It's an ambush, Judge," Harry Rex said.
"Sit down, Mr. Varner,"
His Honor said, and I took a seat in the witness chair. I fired a look at Harry Rex as if to say, "Nice work, lawyer." A bailiff stood in front of me and said,
"Are you armed?"
"What?" I was beyond nervous and nothing made sense.
"A gun. Do you have a gun?"
"Yes."
"Can I have it, please?"
It's in the car." Most of the spectators thought this was funny. Evidently, in Mississippi, one cannot properly testify if one is armed. Another silly rule. Moments later, the rule made perfect sense. If I'd had a gun, I would have begun firing in the direction of Lucian Wilbanks. The bailiff then swore me to tell the truth, and I watched as Wilbanks began pacing. The crowd behind him looked even larger. He began pleasantly enough with some preliminary inquiries about me and my purchase of the paper. I managed the correct answers, though I was extremely suspicious of every question. He was going somewhere. I had no idea where. The crowd seemed to enjoy this. My sudden takeover of the Times was still the source of interest and speculation, and suddenly there I was, in plain view of everyone, chatting about it under oath and on the record. After a few minutes of niceties, Mr. Gaddis, who I assumed was on my side since Lucian certainly was not, stood and said,
"Your Honor, this is all very informative. Where exactly is it going?"
"A good question, Mr. Wilbanks."
"Hang on, Judge."
Lucian then produced copies of the Times and passed them to me, Gaddis, and Lupus. He looked at me and said,
"Just for the record, Mr. Traynor, how many subscribers does the Times have now?"
"About 4,200, I answered with a little pride. When the bankruptcy hit, Spot had squandered all but 1,200 or so.
"And how many copies are sold at the newsstand?"
"Roughly 1,000. Roughly 12 months earlier, I had been living on the third floor of a fraternity house in Syracuse, New York, attending class occasionally, working hard to be a good soldier in the sexual revolution, drinking prodigious amounts of alcohol, smoking pot, sleeping until noon anytime I felt like it, and for exercise, I'd hustle over to the next anti-war rally and scream at the police. I thought I had problems. How I'd gone from there to a witness chair in the Ford County courtroom was suddenly very unclear to me. However, at that crucial moment in my new career, I had several hundred of my fellow citizens and subscribers staring at me. It was not the time to appear vulnerable.
"What percentage of your newspapers are sold in Ford County, Mr. Traynor?"
he asked as casually as if we were talking business over coffee. "Virtually all. I don't have the exact numbers."
"Well, do you have any newsstands outside of Ford County?"
"No." Mr. Gaddis attempted another lame rescue. He stood and said,
"Your Honor, please, where is this going?"
Wilbanks suddenly raised his voice and lifted a finger toward the ceiling.
"I will argue, Your Honor, that potential jurors in this county have been poisoned by the sensational coverage thrust upon us by the Ford County Times. Mercifully and justifiably, this newspaper has not been seen or read in other parts of the state. A change of venue is not only fair, but mandatory."
The word poisoned changed the tone of the proceedings dramatically. It stung me and frightened me. And once again, I asked myself if I had done something wrong. I looked at Baggy for consolation, but he was ducking behind the lady in front of him.
I'll decide what's fair and mandatory, Mr. Wilbanks.
Proceed, Judge Lupus said sharply. Mr. Wilbanks held up the paper and pointed to the front page.
I refer to the photograph of my client, he said. Who took this photograph?
Mr. Wiley Meek, our photographer.
And who made the decision to put it on the front page?
I did.
And the size? Who determined that?
I did.
Did it occur to you that this might be considered sensational?
Damned right. Sensational was what I was after.
No,
I replied coolly. It happened to be the only photo we had of Danny Paget at the moment. He happened to be the only person arrested for the crime. We ran it. I'd run it again. My haughtiness surprised me. I glanced at Harry Rex and saw one of his nasty grins. He was nodding. Go get 'em, boy.
So in your opinion, it was fair to run this photo?
I don't think it was unfair.
Answer my question. In your opinion, was it fair?
Yes, it was fair, and it was accurate. Wilbanks seemed to record this, then filed it away for future use.
Your report has a rather detailed description of the interior of the home of Rhoda Casselaw. When did you inspect the home?
I have not.
When did you enter the home?
I have not.
You've never seen the interior of the house?
That's correct. He flipped open the newspaper, scanned it for a moment, then said,
You report that the bedroom of Miss Casselaw's two small children was down a short hallway approximately 15 feet from her bedroom door, and you estimate that their beds were about 30 feet from hers. How do you know this?
I have a source.
A source? Has your source been in the house?
Yes.
Is your source a police officer or a deputy?
He will remain confidential.
How many confidential sources did you use for these stories?
Several.